Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis. It's one of the most exciting weeks in Iowa politics.
Oh, it certainly is. The state legislature opened its 2023 session last Monday. Governor Reynolds made her annual condition of the state address Tuesday, and she was sworn in for a second full term on Friday, and plenty of other things went on as well. So let's get jumping. Tuesday night, she proposed in her condition of the state address a more ambitious and far-reaching school choice plan. Let's start with that.
Well, we all knew that this was going to be a centerpiece of the governor's speech, but we didn't know the details of the plan until late Tuesday afternoon. And this is really big compared to the bill that couldn't get through the Iowa House the last 2 years in a row. This is massive. The previous bill would have been limited to 10,000 students a year. This one would cover far more students. And after 2 years, there would be no income limits. Anybody in the state of Iowa, including people who already send their children to private schools, could qualify. And also the cost of the voucher that the state would provide would be higher. So it is going to be a much more far-reaching proposal and much more expensive.
It was not a surprise, as you say, that she mentioned it. It was a surprise by the expansiveness of it. Now, the price tag that just started dribbling out from the night she mentioned it last week, the first year is going to be $107 million. By the fourth year, when it's fully rolled out, $341 million a year for these scholarships.
Yes, and the governor's office only released on Tuesday the first year estimate, $107 million. That's when there would still be some income limits. And it wasn't until Thursday that they released figures about how much it would cost in the third and fourth year and ongoing. So more than $300 million a year in perpetuity, really, if it remained open to everyone. This is a little bit different from how other states have rolled out their school voucher plans. They've started small, and then once it was in place, they've expanded it. And this, in this case, the governor has just decided to go big right off the bat.
Now, her plan predicts, and there's really no way to know, but the plan predicts that slightly less than 5,000 students who are now in public schools are going to choose to enroll in non-public schools. Now, that's about 1% of the state's school-age children.
Yes, and right now, about 93% of K through 12 students attend public schools and approximately 7% attend private schools. So this would change it to 92%, 8%. You would still have the vast majority of Iowa students would be attending public schools. And it's also worth noting that 41 of the 99 counties don't have any private schools at all. And then another 23 counties only have one private school. So there are really quite a lot of Iowans who don't even live anywhere where a private school is an option.
Now, we're going to have more on this public school plan, private school plan coming up, but we have other things we want to talk about in terms of her condition of the state address. In order to try to soften this or sweeten it, she also proposed in that same address a 2.5% increase in state aid to public schools, which does not come close to inflation.
Yeah, I mean, it's never, the last 10 years, the average increase in state aid to public schools has averaged less than 3% a year. And costs, even before the inflation that we've seen the last couple of years, school district costs tend to increase by about 4% a year. So, I mean, it is not going to make anybody happy in the public education field. There were a few other points. She wants to give a little bit more flexibility in how school districts can use certain pots of money. There's also a very small amount of money that public school districts would get if students living in their catchment areas chose private school, but it wouldn't really make up for the per pupil funding that they would lose from the state from those people choosing private school.
She also proposed last Tuesday night bills codifying parental rights and giving public school administrators and teachers more flexibility. She's been on this before, and so has the state legislature.
Yes, and this is something that I think she could have gotten some kind of parental rights bill through last year. But when it was clear the House wasn't going to pass the voucher bill, she wanted to hold off and do them at the same time. That's what she said at the time last year.
She called out the criticism and what she used as the term hysteria, she said, that she endured for her decision to reopen public schools during the height of the coronavirus pandemic a couple of years ago. So she really she spoke out against that, fought back against that, if you will.
I mean, this was a little bit strange, honestly, that, I mean, a lot of people commented at the time that she spent a fair amount of time early in the speech airing some grievances about the media, specifically criticizing an Associated Press article that appeared in August of 2020. This was long before vaccines were widely available. And really, the article was talking about how there was a lot of debate among people, among scientists, about whether reopening schools was right. And there certainly were trade-offs associated with that decision, but it was a little bit of a strange lead-off. But I think what she was trying to get at was the people who are criticizing her voucher plan and saying this is going to be the end of public schools in Iowa, that they're going to be wrong, just like they were wrong about how she handled the pandemic.
So perhaps because she's going so big on the private school vouchers thing, she did not get into a couple of other areas that we thought she would. She did not ask for more restrictions on abortion, and she did not mention property tax reduction.
She didn't. And that the property tax one was interesting because we know that the, as we discussed last week, the Iowa House and Senate Republicans really want to do something major on property taxes. The details are quite tricky. And this voucher plan is going to be really expensive. And so who knows? But it sounds like that's not nearly as high a priority for the governor. But of course, they have to get her on board for any major tax bill. As for the abortion restrictions, I mean, she had said before the legislative session that she's going to wait and see what the Iowa Supreme Court does with this pending case where she's trying to reinstate the 2018 abortion ban. But I just want to mention, and we don't have to get into all the legal details right now, that the Iowa Supreme Court may not resolve all of the issues that Republicans are waiting for in that case. They may reject it on procedural grounds, and there would still be an open question about what kind of abortion ban they would uphold.
She also called for tort reform last Tuesday night. This is something she's asked for before, saying Iowa has to cap at $1 million. The amount of non-economic damages a person can claim in court in medical malpractice cases. And this was kind of a surprise, at least to me, she said she plans to cut the number of Iowa state agencies by more than half. Where did that come from?
Well, I have to tell you, Dennis, I wasn't too surprised. I had heard that something was brewing on a state reorganization, and I'd submitted a records request on this, but of course it takes so long for state agencies to provide records. So I hadn't received any records by the time the governor announced that in her speech. But yes, many smaller agencies and boards and commissions are going to be absorbed into larger agencies. The governor has already started down this path by merging the Iowa Department of Public Health and what used to be called the Iowa Department of Human Services. Now that's the Department of Health and Human Services. It's by far the largest in state government, and it's going to absorb a number of other small entities, including the Iowa Department of Aging. The governor also has had one person in charge of the Departments of Revenue and Department of Management. That's like the budget agency. So, I mean, what's kind of unclear about this plan is how much is this going to reduce the number of state employees, and how much is this going to be about rearranging things on a flowchart so it looks like we have fewer agencies, but really we don't have fewer employees. So everyone's waiting to still see the details. I heard that the bill that the governor's office is drafting on that may run to from 2,000 to 3,000 pages.
Ought to be able to read that in 5 or 6 hours. Yeah. All right. But briefly, the Democrats' response to the governor's address, they didn't like it. They were not going to like it. There's not much they can do about it at this point.
Well, they can offer amendments on the floor and put Republicans on the spot. And I think one big thing that you're going to see is an amendment. The Senate Minority Leader Zach Walls already made this clear immediately after the speech, that they are going to make sure that Republicans have to vote on whether to maintain any income limits. The first 2 years of this voucher plan, it would be limited to households with an income of a certain multiple of the federal poverty level. And are these Republican lawmakers from counties that are not economically prosperous, are they really going to vote to open up this plan to have state funding of $7,600 a year for some of the wealthiest families in Polk and Dallas County? So I think they can force some awkward votes on the floor of the House and Senate. But really, the key question, as always, is do the Iowa House Republicans have 51 votes for this plan?
Right. And the governor released her budget proposal last Tuesday as she was delivering her condition of the state address briefly, and we'll be going over this over the next few weeks, calls for spending about $8.5 billion this budget year, an increase of a little bit more than 3%.
And remember that Iowa is still benefiting now from some money coming in from the federal government through the American Rescue Plan. Some of that is going to run out by 2025, 2026. But for now, it's still helping the state keep certain other costs down.
On Wednesday, the state Supreme Court Chief Justice spoke during her condition of the judiciary address, and Susan Christensen said The state system for defending impoverished criminal defendants and juvenile court clients, it's on the brink of collapse. It's a crisis.
Yes. I mean, and this has been a problem that the state, the Iowa Association of Justice, which represents attorneys, including defense attorneys, they wrote to the Chief Justice about this in December, that they have a lot of proposals. Some of them, some of their ideas, the Chief Justice mentioned, they need to pay contract attorneys more. I think that in within the defense attorney bar, they would like to see other changes as well related to scheduling and compensating people for their travel time and certain other things. But it's going to be a big problem. And overall number of lawyers in Iowa has declined. And then within that, the number of Iowa lawyers who are willing to participate in public defense has declined.
And then on Thursday, it was Major General Ben Correll's time to give his condition of the guard address to the legislature. And he said, well, guess what? The coronavirus and other things, educational, societal trends, it has decreased the incentive to serve in the military. And it was a bad year last year and has been bad for a couple of years.
Yeah, it's been tough, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the coming years, because now the federal policy requiring COVID-19 vaccinations for people active duty military, that has been rescinded as part of the big budget bill that Congress passed near the end of the year. So a number of Republican politicians had said that this was hurting recruiting. And so now we're going to see, now that that vaccine mandate is no longer in place, whether that makes recruiting a little bit easier.
And finally, last Friday, the governor was sworn into her second full term in office in a ceremony in Des Moines. And in her inauguration speech, she talked to Democrats. Yes, Democrats. She said, well, what did she say about the caucuses?
Well, I mean, this is something where Iowa Republicans, they keep saying that they really hope that Democrats reconsider and don't abandon the Iowa caucuses. But truthfully, this is a great situation for the Republican Party of Iowa to be in, because they're going to have lots of presidential candidates here pounding the pavement, and they'll be able to say, look, the Democrats turned their backs on Iowa. So, I mean, when the governor said, oh, I really wish Democrats weren't turning their backs on Iowa, I felt like, actually, I think that the Republican politicians are not too unhappy about Democrats losing the caucuses.
You think the governor was just pulling Democrats' legs? Is that?
I think generally that the tenor, the Republican, the messaging coming from the Republican Party of Iowa these last few months, they're very much enjoying the idea that the Democratic Party doesn't want to compete in Iowa anymore.
All right, let's take a short breath here. It's 12 after the hour. Wherever you're listening to us, we're glad you're here. You're in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week as Laura Bellin takes a sip of her water. Your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. How do I know that? I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we're here every week at this time to talk about politics, Iowa style, and how it's affecting all of us. Okay, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. I promised we'd go back to the governor's bill here. Mm-hmm. Bills the GOP introduced last week in the state Senate. Republicans introduced the bill on the governor's funding proposal, so here we go. They even held a hearing.
Yes, and I think the general perception is that the faster they can move the school voucher proposal through, the better the chance of it passing. And so the Senate, as the last couple of years as well, the Senate moved on this pretty quickly, and that's what they did last week. So it's already through a subcommittee. It's going to get through the full Senate Education Committee, I think, very soon and onto the Senate floor. It's not going to have any trouble passing the Senate, and that's seen as something that can increase the pressure on House Republicans.
And they are going to have a hearing on that same bill, and it's going to take place Tuesday, January 17th. I say Tuesday because this is Monday night. We're going live, but this program will be repeated. But it's Tuesday, and you had earlier reported that House leaders had sought to make a change to that longstanding chamber rule to make it easier to pass the governor's school voucher plan. So please explain.
So this is something that's been in place for a really long time in the Iowa legislature, that anytime you have a bill that allocates money, it has to go through the Appropriations Committee. And anytime you have a bill that affects taxes, it has to go through the Ways and Means Committee. So most bills, they'll go through one committee, and then after approval, they can go straight to a full vote on the House or Senate floor, but not if they allocate money or affect taxes. This voucher plan, obviously, it allocates a lot of money to parents under certain circumstances. And also it affects taxes because it says that this education savings account payments would not be subject to state income tax. So normally it would have to go through the Education Committee, or in this case, the House Education Reform Committee. And from there, it would be referred to both the Appropriations and Ways and Means. But the Republicans are writing or are proposing a change to the rule, which would say that just for bills that go through this House Education Reform Committee, which was created specially to consider things like the voucher bill, they would be able to bypass the Appropriations and Ways and Means. They could go straight from that Education Reform Committee right to the floor. And the reason it's important is that means that the Speaker, Pat Grassley, only has to get 51 votes on the floor out of the 64 members of his caucus. He doesn't have to get votes, a majority of votes, in the Ways and Means and Appropriations Committees. And both of those committees do have known voucher opponents serving on them.
We're talking about bills that were introduced in the Senate last week. And I should interrupt this just for a second. We all know that it used to be the first week of any legislative session in Iowa was somewhat somnambulant, shall I say, sleepy. The speeches would be made and people would make, you know, whatever speeches they wanted to make, the leaders, but nothing much would get done. That has changed, and it changed so dramatically last week. Had you ever seen anything like what happened last week?
I had not seen that. I've been following the legislative sessions closely since about 2007. And I do remember that in the beginning of the 2007 session, that was the first year of the Democratic trifecta, and they moved very quickly on a minimum wage increase bill. That was something the governor wanted on his desk right away. So every once in a while, it does happen that they pass a bill. In the 2018 session, Governor Reynolds said she wanted a water quality bill, and they moved on it pretty quickly. But there was an unusual amount of activity last week, there's no doubt. And of course, this voucher bill is overshadowing most other things, but there was some movement on other bills as well.
Yeah, and one of the bills that was introduced last week in the state Senate, and this one by Senator Brad Zahn, was a bill to bring back the death penalty in Iowa. It has not been used or since it was abolished in 1965 by Governor Harold Hughes.
Yes, 1965 was a truly momentous legislative session. There was a Democratic majority in both chambers and a Democratic governor following that 64 landslide, the LBJ landslide. And the 65 legislature just did tons of things. They established community colleges and lots of other changes. But one of the things they did was abolish the death penalty. And ever since, I mean, even as a child, I remember the 1980s. I mean, there were always legislators introducing bills to bring back the death penalty. I haven't heard anything this year that indicates that this thing is going to have a lot of movement, but it's always something that bears watching. Usually one of the most powerful lobbying groups against the death penalty is the Iowa Catholic Conference.
And this particular bill would mandate the death penalty for first degree offenses involving kidnapping or sexually abusing children.
Yes, and that has typically, when there have been similar bills introduced, they're usually limited to some of the most egregious crimes.
Also in the Senate, Republican Senator Jason Schultz introduced a bill, and this one we probably knew was coming because it's been percolating for a couple of years, to eliminate the gender balance requirements for boards, committees, and commissions. It's been percolating in schools, all LGBTQ discussions. This one is another effort to, well, shall we say, restrict some people or some rights.
This one, I was surprised by this. Iowa was the first state to adopt a law that said that there has to be gender balance on most state boards and commissions. And this law was passed. It was signed into law by Governor Branstad in 1987. And now there are 8 states that have similar legislation. But this was something where Iowa was genuinely leading the country. And the law was expanded in 2012 to apply to most county level boards and commissions, although it doesn't, the implementation on that score has fallen short. But generally speaking, at least on the state boards and commissions, it has been pretty well adhered to. So Jason Schultz is the new chair of the Senate State Government Committee, and this looks like it's his baby. He's assigned it to a subcommittee already. I'm planning to go to that subcommittee this week, so we'll see. I don't know whether the Senate leadership is on board with this, and I also don't know whether Governor Reynolds is supportive.
There were also a whole lot of bills the Republicans introduced last week in the state House, many of them involving education. So let's go very briefly down the list here. House File 5 lets parents review all classroom materials. Again, this has been percolating for a while.
Yes, they've been talking about things like this. There was a version of this kind of a bill last year, but the fiscal note on it said it would just cost millions of dollars for school districts to put all curriculum materials online at the beginning of each semester, and also would be very difficult for teachers because they wouldn't be able to be nimble and adjust their curriculum in the middle to meet various classes' needs.
Another bill would require state universities to report what they're teaching Iowa's future teachers about social justice. I'm not even sure how that would work.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that seems to implicate there seem to be some free speech, free expression concerns with that. But I know that Florida has had some similar kind of legislation, and some of these bills, it seem to be copying efforts in other states.
Including this one, House File 8, filed last week, similar to Florida's Don't Say Gay bill.
Yes, and this one, there are a lot of questions about it. The wording is a little bit vague. That the main point is that public school teachers can't instruct on sexual orientation or gender identity for students from kindergarten through third grade. But one question that I've heard people raise, well, what if a teacher is in a same-sex marriage and has a picture of the teacher and the teacher's family on their desk? Would that be deemed to be violating the law? What if a student who had two parents, two moms or two dads came to class, and if they were wanting to talk about their family, would that be seen as presenting inappropriate material? So there are a lot of questions about the wording and how that would work. I think that that would lead to litigation pretty quickly if it were adopted.
Another bill filed last week would prohibit schools from affirming or recognizing a student's preferred gender identity without written consent from their parents. This one flows directly from the controversy from the Lynn Mar School District.
Yes, and this is something where this was an issue that Ashley Hinson raised in her congressional campaign. Governor Reynolds raised it at various points last year. They're very upset by the idea that older students might use certain pronouns at school or come out as LGBTQ at school and parents not be informed. Advocates in the LGBTQ community are really concerned about this one. Iowa Safe Schools and One Iowa very concerned about this bill because they're saying that for some students, it really might not be safe for the school to out them to their parents.
And it has really caused controversy, as I say, in that school district, the Lynn Mar District.
Yes, and elsewhere.
House, absolutely. House Study Bill 31, we've talked about this a little bit, would exempt bills assigned to the Education Reform Committee during this session or any special legislative session from moving through the Ways and Means and Appropriations Committee. You've talked about why they're trying to do this.
Yeah, this is just a carve out to try to smooth the path for the voucher bill to make sure it doesn't get bottled up in committee. I mean, it has happened in the past when they were trying to raise the gasoline tax in 2015. They had trouble getting that out of the Ways and Means Committee in the House, and they had to do some kind of machination there. So this is written just specifically for that bill.
Okay, never let it be said that this show is not educational. Well, wait a minute, have I said that? I'm not sure who said that. Anyway, it's educational. We have time to talk about briefly, how a bill becomes law in Iowa. It seems like, everybody ought to know this, but it's a complex process. Let's go over it.
Well, there's how most bills become law, and then there's how special bills become law. But usually, bills have to go through a committee, at least one committee. Then they have to be approved on the floor of the Iowa House or Senate. Then they go to the other chamber where they have to go through the committee process and the floor approval. And there are two dates. There are two dates that are called funnel dates that usually happen in March, sometimes in late February, the first one. That is a deadline for most bills. But when something really important is going on, often you see it introduced at the last minute as an amendment to an unrelated bill. So really the process can change depending on how much of a priority it is for the House and Senate leaders.
And the goal this year, as it is every year, is to end the session after 110 days, which this year is Friday, April 28th. It's very, very early. We're only in our second week. You think we're going to make it?
You know, they don't usually get there. They usually go a little bit into overtime, sometimes several weeks into overtime. I think this property tax thing may prove a little bit vexing. It wouldn't surprise me if they end up going into May.
We even had a case of voter fraud reported last week in Iowa. Very unusual, and it was unusual who it involved.
Yes, the federal government charged the wife of a Woodbury County supervisor with 52 counts of voter fraud. And this is a real, it's educational because sometimes people talk about a voter fraud, like somebody accidentally casting a ballot in the wrong precinct or voting in a way that voting not realizing that they were ineligible to vote. And this was actual fraud, somebody collecting absentee ballot request forms from unsuspecting voters, sometimes filling out the ballots herself. This was Kim Taylor, who was charged in this federal indictment that was revealed last Thursday. She was trying to help her husband. He was involved in the 2020 primary in the 4th congressional district. district. And then in the November election, he ran successfully that time for Woodbury County Supervisor. She is from Vietnam originally, and she was working in Sioux City's Vietnamese community, sometimes with voters whose English wasn't very good. And so she was signing ballots, signing affidavits for them, and sometimes filling out their ballots. So this is a pretty serious, and she could be potentially, if convicted, looking at some prison time.
Really a full service voter fraud.
Yeah, it really was. And like I said, this is not just an accidental thing. This was a scheme. The indictment laid out a pretty extensive operation that she was running.
While all of this was going on, as if this was not enough, the state Republican Party reelected its chairs.
Yes, there were several years in the 2010s where there was a lot of turnover in the Republican Party leadership, but that's in the past. I mean, they are very happy with the current leaders, Jeff Kaufman, and the co-chair is Linda Uppmeyer. They are both former senior members of the Iowa House. Things are going really well for Iowa Republicans lately in elections. So I guess the idea is don't rock the boat.
Okay. A story that came out last week that had us all, I think, holding our breaths, word that Iowa U.S. Republican Senator Chuck Grassley underwent hip surgery to repair a fracture last week. We don't know very much, at least I don't, about how he did this or how serious it was. We do know he's 89 years old.
Yeah, they did not release any details about how he fractured his hip. And the only thing that I've seen is after the operation that supposedly was successful and that he is looking at a full recovery. But a hip fracture is, of course, concerning for anyone.
Especially at that age. He was just in Iowa. He was in Des Moines on Monday to help swear in Pat Grassley to the State House. And here we found out on Wednesday he's having surgery.
Yes. I mean, he didn't seem to be moving with any difficulty on Monday.
Right. Okay. While all that was going on at the U.S. House of Representatives, Iowa's four GOP congressional members all got really key committee assignments there. Let's start with Marionette Miller-Meeks in the 1st District.
Yeah, so last week they did what are called the A committees. These are the most desirable committees. And Marionette Miller-Meeks got appointed to the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. It's usually considered the third most powerful. It has a really wide-ranging jurisdiction that includes energy, consumer protection, also a lot of healthcare issues run through that committee. And she's been very excited about trying to be one of the leading Republican voices on climate change.
She really lobbied to be on that commission, no question about it.
She did.
In the 2nd District, Ashley Hinson, she got a key appointment.
Yes, she was reappointed to the House Appropriations Committee. It was very unusual 2 years ago when she, as a first termer, got on that committee. And so it was less surprising that she was able to keep that position this time around.
In the 3rd District, Republican Zach Nunn, he got a key appointment.
House Financial Services, this is also very desirable. Des Moines is a major insurance center, and this is a good committee for fundraising. Cindy Axne, whom Zach Nunn defeated in November, she served on this committee, and so this was probably one of his top requests.
And not to be outdone, 4th District Republican Randy Feenstra, well, he got an appointment.
Yes, he was on the Ways and Means. He is a past chair of the Iowa Senate Ways and Means Committee. And so he got to be, this is one of the most powerful U.S. House committee. Everything, all bills which deal with taxation and tariffs run through that committee. So very important.
And in the U.S. Senate, Republican Chuck Grassley, his appointment showed the importance of seniority because he got a ton of important appointments last week.
That's right. He's going to be the ranking Republican on the Budget Committee, and he's going to continue to serve on Finance, Judiciary, Agriculture, and some others, and as well as the Joint Committee on Taxation. He really, as the Dean of the Senate, it looks like they just gave him almost his pick of anything he wanted.
Exactly right. Just every one of these committees a powerhouse. And Republican Senator Joni Ernst, well, she's got some key appointments.
Yes, I mean, she is no longer going to be on Judiciary, but she will be on Armed Services, Environment and Public Works, and the Small Business and related committees. She's not ranking member on any of them. I mean, she's only in her second term, so she doesn't have as much seniority in her caucus. But remember, she is in the 4th ranking position on the entire Senate Republican leadership team, as we discussed last week.
And in less than a minute, we usually try to talk about the coronavirus. It appeared to ease up a bit in Iowa last week.
Yeah, although I just saw somebody post that wastewater levels are up again in Des Moines and Cedar Rapids. And usually that's kind of like the leading indicator of better than case numbers are. So unfortunately, when the wastewater levels go up, we usually see hospitalizations go up a few weeks from then. So I hope that that doesn't happen, but wouldn't be a bad idea for people to mask up if they're out in public.
And in 30 seconds, what are you going to be watching this week?
I'm going to be watching. The House is going to allocate the B committee. So I'm going to see if any of Iowa's representatives get to serve on a second committee, for instance, the Agriculture Committee. I'm also going to be looking in the legislature. There's going to be a subcommittee on that bill repealing the gender balance law and some other things. I'm just looking to see what might have legs.
Hey, we got through a heck of a lot tonight, didn't we?
We did.
Laura, we're out of time now, though. I'll see you next Monday night.
All right. See you then.
You have been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. You're listening Post for Politics, Iowa style. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will indeed be back next week in this same time slot when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. There will be a lot of all of that. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. Between now and next time, have a safe, happy, and healthy week.